First of all, I want to express my admiration for parents that are constantly interested in learning more, although they have experience, and I'm sure they have successes, and there's so many other things competing for your time. But the fact that people take time out, and hopefully the kids are asleep, so it's not on their cheshbon. I think it's a very beautiful thing. And, honored to be here. I suggest that we talk a little bit about inspiring passion. So, passion is very, very important. There's one big issue with passion is if we don't feel the passion, how are we going to inspire the passion in our children? So I guess the first thing is really that we have to make sure that we're very passionate about what we tell, what we teach, what we expect, what we guide and direct our children. That's really very important. The truth of the matter is that passion is more important probably than anything else, because passion comes from the heart. Intellectually, we know a lot of things, but there's a big distance between the mind and the heart. The Balei Musa say it's the longest distance in the world to come from here to here. But without that heart involvement, without that heartfelt involvement, without that passion, then the messages that we give ring very hollow. It doesn't. Okay, it penetrates maybe here, but if it doesn't reach the heart, then it's not really going to. That's the motor. That's the institution. I want to call it an organ because it's not the organ of the heart, but that's the aspect of us, that the emotion that really makes sure that we do things and that we do them right and that we care enough about them and that we appreciate them. All of that comes from feeling. So I think it's very important that we focus on that a bit and see what we can do to expand the passion of the mission. Truth of the matter is that the previous generation, they had an interesting way of looking at things. I'm talking about the Holocaust survivors and maybe the next generation after that. You know, they used to call their children, their sons at least, my Kaddishal. It means the one who's going to say Kaddish after me. Mm-hmm. Now, that may sound very bizarre to us. You know, my child is my Kaddishal. Like, well, what are you talking about? But I think it represented something to them because they looked at it as perpetuating a tradition that was almost lost. That generation knew, they experienced, those that actually experienced, they experienced the worst torment and torture and efforts to eradicate us as a people. And therefore, they those that came out in one piece, those that came out still religiously committed, they came out with a passion to rebuild. The Ponovizhorov lost a family in Europe and comes to Bnei Brak and sees a little hill, says he's building a city there. And when they told him, you're dreaming. It was a nothing, it was a farm, a little town, there was nothing there, dirt streets all over the place. And he said, I may be dreaming, but I'm not sleeping. The Kloisenberger Rebbe, they came to Eretz Yisrael, came to Netanya, hospitals and moistures, and people who lost their whole family. Satmar Rebbe came here also, lost the family, started, they didn't have a minion. The Rebbe used to stand in the street looking for a tzenter. And today, it's not Shaykh, they're probably the strongest Hasidic group. So these people had this passion for survival. and they had the passion for educating and giving over to the next generation. And that's really why they built so many day schools, they built so many, well, they tried at least to build yeshivas. There was that feeling, that urgency almost. As life became easier, as we became more the establishment, as everything seems to be in place for all of our religious needs, our educational needs, our religious needs, and there's so many different options. Some people feel there are really no options, but that's besides the point. But there's, you know, there's so many different options and so much going on that we tend to take it for granted, and we just, life goes on. And we don't think that we're in a position to guarantee the next generation, that we're needed to guarantee the next generation. We got it made. Everything is fine. Everything is great. We're, you know, we won. We won the battle against history. And, well, yes, now people are beginning to realize that that battle isn't over yet, but that's besides the point. But I think we have to look more at our children and recognize that we want to assure their future as menschen, as good people, the future as Jews, the future as Torah Jews, and this to us is extremely important. And if we're looking to find a little passion, and I don't mean this in a to scare anybody, but the numbers of people who are drifting from Yiddishkeit are staggering, both on the junior high school, high school, and adult married people level, married with families, children. So there's dangers out there. Nobody's immune. I'll never forget a Chassidish pre-1A Rebbe, a tall man, I remember, many years ago in Los Angeles, after I gave a session for the Rebbeim in his school, he walks me out to the car and he starts to cry. What is he crying? He says, I have these little boys. They're so zis. They come into the pre-1A and every one of them, they're so sincere. And when they learn, you could see the smiles in their faces and the fire in their eyes. And they're so into the whole Yiddishkeit. And he says, and now, in their teenage years, some of these kids come back on their motorcycles with their hair dyed in 5 different colors and with piercings and earrings and he says, what happened? What happened? So, there's no guarantees. And we really have to look at it that this is something that we have to become very passionate about because there are serious issues. So that's one step in the passion. Not to take it for granted. We can't take anything for granted. But we need much more than that. So, first of all, one of the best ways, actually Rav Moshe Feinstein said this at a hesped for a family that in those days, in the early days, that was, their children all remained by Yiddishkeit. In those days, it wasn't so posh. And he says, these people, the reason they were so matzliach with their children, because they never heard the phrase, Sishver tzezayin ayid. It's difficult to be Jewish. They didn't hear krechtzing. They heard simchas achayim. They heard the sense of privilege. They never felt the sense of burden. They never felt a sense of being overwhelmed. Oi, I can't take it anymore. And the Mela, they got that sense of, hey, this makes you happy. This is exciting. This is meaningful. This is something that I want. You know, we say in Birchas HaTorah every day, we ask Hashem to make the Torah, the learning, pleasant. It should be sweet, it should be pleasant. In our mouths, and in the mouths of the Jewish people. And then we make a statement. ונהיה אנחנו וצאצאינו וצאצאי עמך בית ישראל, כולנו יהודי שמך ולא ימדי סרסך לשמוע. And what will happen if it's pleasant, then we and our children and our grandchildren and the children of Klal Yisrael will all be learning and appreciating and enjoying the learning and so forth. And the question is, how come they didn't ask that their children should enjoy it? It says, V'harav no Hashem alokeinu estevei soros chobafinu uvafi abcho beis Yisrael, in our mouths and in the Jewish people at large. Then we say, V'niyah anachnu v'tzeetzoeinu v'tzeetzoe abcho beis Yisrael, we will, and our children, our descendants. Why did we ask for that in the first place? We make a statement that it's going to happen, but we never really requested it. We only requested for ourselves and for Amcha Beis Yisrael. I think the reason may be very simple. If our children see this sweetness, this v'harivno, this passion that we have, then we don't even have to ask that they should have it and follow it. They'll want to do it memela. It'll happen. It's almost a psychological reality. If they see that a life of Yiddishkeit is a life of pleasantness and sweetness and happiness and fulfillment and meaning and purpose and enjoyment, then of course I'm in. That's what I want. But if it doesn't appear that way, if they hear, it's so difficult, this is so difficult, and that's so difficult, the other's so difficult. You know, in the in certain more modern segments of the Orthodox community, kids get a sense that Shabbos, that everybody's just looking at their watch to wait till Shabbos is over so they can do whatever they do on a Saturday night, if you will. But I don't know if we have that problem. But we do have the issue. They have to feel, they have to see, we have to express. And the truth of the matter is that it's the greatest privilege in the world. The fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has created a world only for the purpose of chesed, has given us the key how to live that good life and to be zeiche to a life of pleasantness and happiness and fulfillment and meaning and purpose and closeness to Him in this world, not to even mention in the eternal world, that's such a privilege. It's really something that should excite us. It's really something that should be the most meaningful thing in my life. What a privilege. And every mitzvah that He gave me, and every challenge and test that He gives me, and even, I dare say, every pain that He gives me, is all part of the system to allow me and to enable me to get more and more and more and more good, because that's all He wants. You know, no one should ever make the mistake that Hashem needs, when we say, serve Hashem, to be an Eved Hashem, He needs servants. He can handle it by Himself. He needs, where we're going to read in this parasha, Vosli Mikdash Shachanti B'Seichom, He needs a place to live. He's homeless. Korbonus. Es korboni lachmi ishai reach michoichi. Just read it this morning. Oh, He needs breakfast and dinner. He needs nothing. It's all privileges that He gives us. We must focus on the fact that we are privileged. We are privileged. And if we're privileged to be involved in a family where our husbands are learning, or our husbands are teaching Torah, this is like, there's no greater privilege in the world. And there's no greater schus in the world. And yes, we may be working hard, and it's oftentimes very difficult, but we must transpose in our thinking and in our feeling the difficulties into a sense of privilege. We are privileged. We're so privileged that, you know, Misinai Yotzo Sina Lo'ilom. From Sinai, Chazal say, that's where the hatred for the Jew comes from. Because we have a life. We have a directive. We have a divine directive. A directive directly given to us in an incontrovertible way by the Creator Himself. And He tells us the secret of connecting with Him. He tells us how much he loves Klal Yisrael. He tells us, if we read Shir Hashirim, Shleim HaMelech tells us that despite the fact that we seem so distant and he seems behest upon him, the love is alive and well, just as it was at Har Sinai, just as it was in the Beis HaMikdosh. And when we realize this, and when we realize the sense of privilege that we have, it has to permeate everything that we do. But it's easier said than done, no question about it. I think it requires a lot of effort, a lot of focus, maybe a lot of learning, but it's definitely achievable. But what happens is, if we achieve this in our own persona, then our children begin to catch it. They begin to sense it. Even little young children, they do. But we have to take it a step further. We have to create excitement about the mitzvahs. The schools today, in the younger grades, I'm not sure in the older grades it's as much, but in the younger grades, they're trying to create a lot of excitement. The projects that they make, the way they talk about the parsha, the way they animate things, that, because that's what kids respond to. And we have to make these things. If they're doing a mitzvah, it's fun. It has to be fun. Whatever they're doing, if they're washing negelvas, or they're putting on tzitzis, or they're making a brocha, they have to see how much we enjoy it, how much we appreciate it, how much to make it as pleasant as possible, to give them a Shabbos. Shabbos should be it should be a pleasure for them. They can't appreciate all the sublime messages, but they can appreciate that this is the day. They have special foods, special goodies. They have a special Shabbos party. They got special Shabbos toys. They got whatever it is. So rather than just imposing, as they get older, restriction on them, we impose a sense of, wow, this is such a special day. How pleasurable it is. I look forward to this day. It has certain restrictions. Instead of doing this ABC, I got to do Aleph, Beis, Gimel. No. Because if it's exciting, if I enjoy it, if they see a big smile on our face. The Shabbos table can be very, very pleasant for children. But the pleasantries last about 15 minutes. That's about all the patience that they have. And, you know, there are still some people that insist, and I guess that's a little bit extreme, that the kid sits there, fully dressed in whatever the appropriate dress that they're wearing, sitting quietly, listening to adults talk about something they don't even know what they're talking about, and you have to sit at the Shabbos table. You know, that's obviously not very constructive. But in the time that they're there, they should be the center, the focus, and it should be exciting. And when they say something, and they say something good, or they say something smart, or you can interpret it as something smart, even if it wasn't, there's such excitement. There's reward. I've seen parents sitting there with a box of candies around all the kids around the table, an answer to a question. Yeah. Another one, whatever it may be. But we have to find a way that these experiences, these religious experiences, are enjoyable, are exciting. Then as they get older, they also have to be meaningful. They have to know what it is that, how fortunate we are. A world of people scurrying back and forth, day and night, go stop for a red light in Manhattan, you'll see 500 people walking back and forth in 60-second period. And if you ask them, what are you doing here in this world? I don't know. I had the same thought myself. What's your purpose? I don't know. And most people have the sense they're just waiting for it to end and trying to enjoy it, in the process. And kids can begin to, we have a purpose, we have a mission. And they begin to feel that mission. They understand that mission. They understand that there's a creator. They understand the creator created the world with a purpose. And by the way, the purpose that they can understand is so beautiful. And they can be so excited about it. The purpose, Chazal tell us, is Litzarefes Abriyos. Loinitnu HaMitzvos El Litzarefes Abriyos. To refine human character. To remove the impurities. We can get, at a reasonable age, and I'm not good at exact ages, and I'm not sure every child is exactly the same age, but when they get already to 7, 8, 9 years old, they can already appreciate that we have a responsibility, and that is to improve ourselves. And when a person feels that they're improving themselves, they feel so good about it. Everything is about me. Everything is about making myself a better person. When a person feels that they've improved, a person feels so good. You know, I'm sure we spoke once, the definition of happiness is validation. Yishur, feeling good about oneself. And if they feel that they've improved themselves, they become more like Hashem, they become more godly. Wow, I feel good, I'm happy. And I have a sense of purpose, I have a mission. And every time they do something good, it elevates their sense of self-worth, their sense of validity, and they live life at a different level. Even if they don't remember the good that they did, but it elevated them because they felt better about themselves. And this is really where passion comes from, because I'm doing something. I have meaning, I have purpose, I have privilege. This is a privilege. The Creator Himself has revealed to us the purpose of creation. It's my life takes on a whole different sense and meaning. And I think we as parents have to give them a lot of this, because unfortunately a lot of kids are not getting it otherwise. And it's so critical. So we do have to be able to articulate meaning, benefits, what's in it for me, why is it good for me? You know, one of the biggest mistakes that so many people make is that we're doing things for Hashem. When we use the terminology of serving Hashem, of avodas Hashem, what we're really doing is sending a very mistaken message. Because if you have an eved, a servant, the purpose of the servant is to serve you. Here, the purpose of the service is to elevate us, is to benefit us, is to generate reward for us, is to generate meaning and fulfillment and happiness in our lives. And they must understand that. The biggest turnoff is feeling burden, responsibility, pressure, and feeling that it's all for some other being, individual, what it may be, and nothing's in it for me. Everybody, we're all about me. That's what the world is today. And that's what the human being is. We are very self-centered. We're created that way. We want benefit. We want things to be good for us. And that's the way it happens. And then a mother has a very special role to play in showing passion for learning. And that's contagious. And that passion shows itself in the concern that she has for her husband's learning. That passion shows itself in the concern that she has for her children's learning. I'll never forget when I once went to visit the Navardika Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbi Yankov Yaffin, Zecharo Livracha, Yeshiva in Borough Park, and I was very close with him. I went to visit him. And his wife, I said, where's Rosh Yeshiva? He's at a meeting with Balabatim. His father had just passed away and he took over the yeshiva. And she starts to cry. I said, why are you crying? She says, I slave. She was a professor. She had, I think, 3 PhDs. And she taught in universities. And she was a very, very accomplished woman. She says, I slave at 2, 3 jobs that my husband and my children should be able to sit and learn. And now he has to waste time talking to Balabatim and crying. Mamish, try to calm it down. I explained to her what it means. Achzokas HaTorah, that is for money for the yeshiva. That's his job now. You know, all the years his father, whatever it was. But this passion. So I slave that my husband and my children should learn. But the children, when they see that, it's a different sense of chashivus. It's a different sense of feeling. It's a different sense of how important it is. And then how much we care about their learning. How much we care about their learning. You know, I'm a little bit embarrassed to say this, but I think it does make the point. Over the years, I was always very busy and did try to learn with my children, but never enough, and certainly never enough to satisfy my wife's love of Torah and passion for the learning of her children. And she really, she learned Mishnayos. She must have known all the Masechtas that they learn in Darche, you know, she learned. But the funny thing was, I'm sure maybe you heard this story though, I'm driving along once on Central Avenue, and in the distance I see a woman carrying what was clear to me was an art scroll Gemara. And I think to myself, what's with these women? They have to go get Gemaras, learn Gemara. It's not enough for them what they learn, what they do, what they did, their children, the husband, their children. And I get a little close, I see it's my wife. She wasn't satisfied with the, you know, Mishnayos was one thing, she was able to handle that, but Gemara, she never learned Gemara. So she had to get herself an Oscar Gemara to be able to learn Gemara with the kids, because her husband, Nebuch, was not doing the job properly. But what the kids saw, they saw such passion. They saw such passion, and that's why, Baruch Hashem, they inherited that passion. They inherited from her. That, because how much my mother cares. And in a sense, a mother can do more than the father in a different reason. Because the father's learning. So he learns, he knows, learning Gemara. Okay, so he's, now he's learning with his kid. Or he's not learning with his kid, but they're learning. They're doing the same thing. She's not. She's not really. She's not learning the same Masechta that he's learning. But she cares. She cares so much. She's not even involved in the details of it, but she cares. My children should learn. That sends a message of how important it is. That sends a message. And again, all of these things, passion should not be confused with pressure. They both start with P, and that's all they have in common. And other than that, they have probably an inverse relationship. Because if with my passion, I pressure or over-pressure them, then you can forget all the passion is gone to waste. Because pressure evokes resistance. It's just a law of physics. It's a law of human nature. It's the reality of our existence. So everything has to be, you know, there's no pressure. They give them opportunities, give them some choices. Choice, by the way, is a very, you know, we have to learn tonight. Do you want to do it now? Do you want to do it later? You know, that's the salesman teach us. That's the best way to make sales. You don't ask, would you like to purchase my, what I'm selling? Say, no, would you like this one or that one? You want the red one or you want the blue one? It's already, you know, the assumption is, of course, you're going to buy. Just the question is which one. But they have choices. They feel like mention. They don't feel. And once, if it doesn't happen, a person has to think not about the moment, but about the long term. Chinuch. Maybe we mentioned is Rashi's definition is Tchilas Knisas Odom Leumnes Sheosid Lamud Boy. It's the beginning of the entry into some path or profession or trade that a person is going to maintain. The goal of Chinuch is long term. It's not short term. If tonight they're not in the mood, let's not obsess over it. You know, my passion. Passion has to be controlled too, you know. And the passion should be for the long term. I want to see my son, my daughter develop in a healthy, menschlich, deeply, passionately committed connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to Yiddishkeit and to the family and to the parents. And therefore, I can't over-pressurize. When I pressurize, I sometimes lose everything that's there. But on the other hand, if it goes, it's gentle, it's kind, it's I remember I don't want to quote it because I may be misquoting it, but there were some parents that referred to a certain evening hours in very derogatory terms. You know, between the dinner and the baths and the homework and the going to sleep. And it can't be derogatory. It has to be pleasant. It has to be calm. It has to be, now, it's easy for me to say. I would leave the house and leave my wife with all the kids, you know. But these are the goals. The goal, we have to know the goals. And there is another point I think that we should make also, and then maybe we'll stop and talk about it a little bit. But there's another point we should make too, that we cannot allow ourselves to feel guilty or inadequate for any shortcomings in the parental plan that don't come to fruition. Because that's the game. In case you never discovered it, but kids have a Bechira Chofshis. The Bechira Chofshis comes, I believe, with birth, or maybe even before birth. I'm not quite sure. You know, I never carried a child like that. But I'm not sure. You know, they got a mind of their own from the very beginning. The very beginning. And therefore, sometimes we're going to succeed and sometimes we're not going to succeed. The Iker is not to win all the battles. The Iker is to win the war. You're going to lose battles. And when you lose battles, you take it graciously. You don't hold a grudge. You don't take revenge the next day. I mean, these are ridiculous things. I don't have to tell this to loving mothers. But no, yeah, this battle, okay. You know, you win some, you lose some. But my goal is on the long term. And I think with the goal on the long term, and if we allow ourselves to appreciate the privilege that we have to raise these beautiful children, and if we allow ourselves to internalize and then externalize, to express to our children the excitement, the passion, the sense of privilege that we have for Yiddishkeit, and then do it in a way that's calm and pleasant and darchei noyam, and not pressurized and not threatening and not screaming and yelling. And we want always anything that has to do with something that we want to remain with them has to be done in a pleasant way, because otherwise it's just a negative association. I mean, I deal a lot with these problems, people that have certain negative experiences, and they haunt them forevermore. They haunt them forever. And I would just suggest one more thing, which is not directly on topic. When we make mistakes, we have to apologize. There was once a big discussion a few years ago about whether parents and teachers should apologize if they do something wrong to their child or their student. And I couldn't believe that intelligent people were discussing that topic. What's the shaila? And they should know that we can make mistakes, we can apologize, and we can do tshuva, we can try to improve. And that itself is the greatest lesson. Okay. Who disagrees? Let's start with that. Or whatever.
Can I ask a random question?
What's that?
Can I ask a random question?
What do you want?
I don't know. Sometimes it feels like we're brainwashing our kids.
Okay, I would just make sure you use kosher soap. we're brainwashing. Of course you're brainwashing your kids.
Yeah.
I do it all day long, just a few houses down. You know what I mean? Absolutely. Why are you brainwashing your kids? Because you know what's going on in the world. You know how decadent and sick the world is today. And if it was ever true, it's exponentially true today. in the last few years, it's off the charts what's going on. All I hear on the radio, I don't even have a radio in the house. I guess I do, but I don't even know how to use it. But in coming from Far Rockaway to here and going from here back to Far Rockaway, that's all the news I hear ever. It's enough to make you say, stop the world, I want to jump off. You know, it's like, it's insane what's going on. So we want our children to have a life, a meaningful life, a good life, a menschliche life. And our values to us, we have no doubt that our values, see, if we were goyim, lahavdil, and we have no derech in life, so just because I chose this, let my kids have a choice. I would advocate that, you know, as long as they make a healthy choice. There's many different options. Well, first of all, today there's no different options. There's nothing out there. But besides that, but we don't have that. We know what's right. We live our lives based on a truth. We live our lives following 3,334 years since Maimon Har Sinai, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu revealed to us the purpose of creation in a way that there's no room for doubt. So that's what we want to give over to our children. So what else should we do? We want to say, well, you know, there is Judaism. There's also other religions out there. And Yossi, how old are you? Would you like to make a choice? I'll introduce you to. That's what we must do, but we have to do it in a way that they should really want it, and we should do it in a way that they should appreciate it. If we do it in a way that they're going to suffer trauma doing it later on because they were traumatized by, you know, today the first generation of Holocaust survivors' children have a lot of that trauma because their parents were just not present, and no one in the world could blame them. No one could blame them. What they went through, we can read all the Holocaust books and watch all the Holocaust movies, and we still have no hasoga what they went through. You know, I mean, I remember Holocaust survivors telling me that didn't even go through the worst. And 40 years later, there isn't a night that I don't wake up from a nightmare. There isn't a night that I don't wake up in the middle of the night from a nightmare. So these people and their children, you know, suffered trauma. They either pushed them or they neglected them or they didn't know what to do with them. They didn't know what to do with themselves. And a lot of that was korbonos. But Baruch Hashem, today, you know, we have a more educated mothers and parent body. And we certainly don't have the baggage that, you know, that generation had. And in a very pleasant and loving and caring way, we do want to convince our children to. So I have no conscience pangs about my brainwashing activities, none whatsoever. However, to be honest, you have to make sure that it's for their benefit, not for ours. See, the minute I catch myself, that I am neger bedover, that something that could affect me, very dangerous. And as a parent, we have to do that too. We're out in public, and the kid's doing something that embarrasses us a little bit, and especially in some of the from communities, it's very easy to get embarrassed. Still, the primary goal has to be what's good for my child, not what will the Joneses, or they're not the Joneses out here, they're the Katzes or the Cones or the, you know, what are they going to say? That can't be. It can't be for me, it can't be for the Shidduchim, for the other children, it can't be for anything. And kids feel that. They feel it, it's for them. It's for them. You know, the old-fashioned thing, the father's beating up his kid and says, this hurts me more than it hurts you. You know, this, it doesn't work like that. It's not, you can't get away with that. I don't know how they got away with it, that generation. But they have to honestly feel and realize that we're doing it for them. And use the kosher soap, not the bathroom soap. Use the one over here. Anyway. Yeah.
So
for a five-year-old, it's, I mean, that makes sense. You're kind of brainwashing. But what about when they get older and they want to try this? They never tried it. What is Shabbos doing for me? What is Sneas doing for me? I want to try not doing it. I want to try watching a movie or reading that magazine.
Yeah. So, first of all, and forgive me and don't report me to anyone for saying this. In theory, that's not such a bad thing. In theory, I know people who did things which were clearly forbidden, and they were completely knowledgeable about it. And I sensed that the purpose was that I should be able to do it properly, because I sensed that I was forced into this. I sensed that I never had any choice. I never made a choice. And I had to show that I could do the opposite in order to feel that I'm doing it for real. And sometimes that helps. However, unfortunately, it's not permissible and it's too dangerous. If we had a guarantee that it would work, maybe we could even find a heter. I don't think so, but we could try. You know what I mean? I would certainly search for a heter for that, because I've seen what it could do. But we don't have a guarantee. We don't have a guarantee, and therefore we can't do that. And therefore, when a kid comes and wants to do something like that, then we have to explain to them that. See, again, let's listen. We have to explain to them that they have a good point. In most questions, in most attempts at deviation, if you validate the attempt, you've won half the battle. Because you're right, there is something to that. It makes a lot of sense. But, and then you explain why it's too dangerous, why it's too complicated, why we can't afford to do such a thing, why we're not allowed to do such a thing. But, and because there is something to it, and I think when they hear that, they're already much more, let's face it. Most people, the most comforting thing to them is that I was heard. I'm right. I have a good point. You know, to do it or not, they didn't really think they could do it anyway. You know, maybe they wanted to look a little bit, to study a little bit. Maybe, you know, under certain guidance, that might not be a bad idea. If a parent would say, hey, you know, let's look, let's compare, but not to let them read on their own and get involved. But, you know, yeah, here I got a little bit of a synopsis of this philosophy, that philosophy. Or, for example, I mean, this one thing that I tell people, which is just, I think it really resonates, and that is, there are other religions, okay? But the claims that they make, forget the reality, the claims that they make are very different. Private revelation, private miracles. Judaism, the only one. Public revelation, public miracles, public revelation. Very strange. So there's not even competition over here. I mean, when you think about it, a private, not only that we read in Parashat Shmos, Moshe Rabbeinu, Hashem appeared to Moshe and he said to go tell Klal Yisrael, I'm taking you out of Mitzrayim. He said, V'hein lo yaminu li. Who's going to believe that God appeared to you in the desert by yourself in a burning bush? You know, public revelation, something. So the case for Yahadus is so strong that, you know, that most people, when they see that, they... Now, there may be other things within Judaism that they want to explore. That could be. And there, too, a little bit... Let's put it this way. To deal with that issue, you have to start dealing before, years before. What do I mean? They have to feel that they have choices, right? They have to feel they have, if a kid grows up thinking they have choices, they don't feel so, I must break out. I must become free. I must be able to do my thing. What do you mean you do your thing? When you're 2 years old, I put out three sets of clothing and said, whichever one you want, which one do you want to wear today? When you were 4 years old, you made choices about what you want to have for a snack. When you were 5 years old, I don't know what the parasha is, but all of these things. So when I grew up on choices, so making a choice is not such a new exciting experience for me, because I do it all the time. A person who was never given any choices, they're biting at the bit, and I gotta do something. So I think, you know, if we prepare early on, and they get this sense of, you know, and also choices to do things that are inappropriate are not good. But questions about things inappropriate are very appropriate. And that's, I just had this Mitzvah Shabbos. I've had it many times, but this was very striking. A brilliant kid. All around good. 12th grader, I think it was, I forgot already, I talked to a lot of people. I think it was a 12th grader, not religious anymore, maybe 11th grade, I don't remember, not religious anymore, and one complaint, he was never able to ask questions. He felt questions were unwanted, he saw that questions were ignored. There was no room for them. There was no interest in them. That's the most, by the way, the most insulting and invalidating thing there is. You know, you can't even ask a good question. You know, like, and because of that, he said, there's something missing here. There must be some bluff. They probably don't know answers. So it's very important questions. And these kids, whether it's a 5-year-old or a 10-year-old or a 15-year-old, they can come up with some questions that are really rough, but we have to be willing to deal with them. And you can't, you know, the statement, oh, we don't ask such questions. Oh, that's a cursus. In this house, such things shouldn't be discussed. It's very, very dangerous. You have to be able to, and there's nothing wrong saying, I don't have the answer, but we're going to try to find out. I think that's. I think if there are choices all along the way, and there's an openness to questions, I don't think it's going to have to get that far as to, you know, to have them actually do things that, or allow them, or whatever. And by the way, there is something else that to bring to mind. A kid comes and says that they did something terrible. You have to be very, very careful. You don't want to condone it. Say, oh, that's wonderful. You know, that's wonderful. I went out and I ate a cheeseburger at McDonald's. Oh, that's wonderful. How did it taste? You know, yeah, let me know. Why don't you save me a little bit? You know, no. On the other hand, if you faint, oy, how could you do such a thing? Oy, my son, my daughter, how? They'll never tell you another thing again. You lost it. You have no communication with your children. So we have to find the balance between that's inappropriate, you know, I understand what went on there, but can't do that. We're just not allowed to do that. There's no, and let's talk about it. And on the other hand, I don't lose my cool. I don't, because if I become overwhelmed, they're never going to tell me anything, and you lose that connection, and you lost the kid. You don't know what's going on in their life, so. Very important balance.
At what age do you start to implement these things? At what age do you implement these things? So whether Shabbos, not doing muksa, I agree with everything you've said, and I do that part, but I haven't really started, let's say, not having melchik.
I would, like, just as we say for an adult, sur meirava se tov, first, sur meira, don't do bad. And then I say tov, then do good. I would read it backwards for the children. I would say I say tov, and then sumera. Make the things pleasant first. Good things, what to do, the positive things, you know. And then, you know, and even things that we want, explain, like they make a brocha. When they're old enough, before they're old enough to make brochas, it doesn't even mean anything. They're not even allowed to answer omein if they're not higia lechinuch and they're making brochas. But make a bracha, stop to explain, you know, how thankful we have to be to Hashem that we have. And not just we have food. We don't just have food. We have food with every taste, with every nuance. We have kosher restaurants from every place in the world that they have now bring kosher food. I mean, they bring, but they imitate. Maybe it's not such a good imitation, I wouldn't know. But Lamaisa, but they should feel, appreciate what they have. The positive. When it comes to Shabbos too, I wouldn't talk so much about Muktzah. Look the other way until
right.
they appreciate Shabbos.
That, but I've what? Been doing that.
But
I've
just that let them have good Shabbos. A Shabbos toy, a Shabbos gift, a Shabbos treat, a Shabbos this. They got the Shabbos cereal, the Shabbos, I don't know
right.
what, you know.
So,
that's
so
it.
It's okay to continue to...
Yeah, I mean, what the time for chinuch? What's that?
Isn't there a halacha, like there's halacha about it, like 9-3, whenever they start understanding.
Wait. So wait a second. The way I understand the halacha, and I am not the pesik, but the way I understand the halacha is it's not necessarily the age, it's the age that they're holding at. It's their when they understand the inyan. If they can understand that Hashem created the world, and on Shabbos the world was finished and complete. And he invited us to celebrate with him the day that he completed the world. I'm not sure at what age, because everybody would be 40, 50, what age they understand. But, you know, but once they can understand that, then that's when. But in the meantime, it should be enjoyable. So that part they understand. They associate with Shabbos, this, enjoyable, you know, and the treats and the singing, whatever they like.
Yeah.
And the clothing. And if they don't like the clothing, then be mevater on that, like, you know, whatever they like. And then they have positive associations. Once there's positive associations, there's coverage to be able to take some of the restrictions. The restrictions are not as painful if this, you know, it's like it's a total package. Yeah, it comes with some restrictions, but wow, I wouldn't give up on this day. So I think that's the approach. And exact ages, that I don't know, and I'm not even sure that there are exact ages. I think it's when they can understand what...
It's the same with, like, milk.
What?
There's this thing for children in halacha that's really good, and it explains, like...
Really? What is that?
Children in halacha, it's the safer that my husband looks up all the time.
Really?
It explains, like, it's not exact ages, it's more their understanding. Like, it's like around this age when they start to understand X, Y, Z, then you have to start, and it, like, explains...
Very nice. You know who wrote it? Who?
I'll
ask him.
I
can ask
him. Do you
have it? I don't know. I know we borrowed it from you. I don't know if you have it.
Oh, you don't have it.
but it's very good. And it talks about just a lot of children pertinent stuff, like medicine, shots. I don't know, a lot of stuff in it that has to do with kids and halacha. It's
okay.
Very, yeah,
it's
good.
I guess I'll ask another one.
What's that?
I guess I'll ask another one. So for example, today, one of my kids was like, oh, I really want this right now. Like, so down for it. Like, Hashem, please. And it didn't happen right then. Like, what do you do with that? Like, you're waiting for something to come. And I'm like, kid, down and then just come. And I'm like, okay, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes. I'm like, okay, we'll call that. Okay. So like, on one hand, like, I don't want to put them. I obviously set up as much as I can. Like, dumb for that. Oh my gosh, look what just came. I didn't
want.
So
that's
like,
the way.
So
that's
I
the way.
Yeah. So, like, when I find out.
That goes together with the brainwashing.
Set things up, you know? So, but like, let's say, well, so yesterday when I started, like, my son's like, Hashem, please let mommy's voice come back. Like, please let everybody go. Oh, so sweet. But, like, I wasn't, like, in the morning, I'm like, oh, I sound worse. Like, what are you going to do? Like,
so look, they do have to learn. I like to say it. I think I believe we all should have that attitude, that Hashem never says no, but He says not now, or not yet. Don't tell him the extent of the not yet. Sarah had to wait till she was 90 till she had a child. You know, but they have to understand that Hashem knows. We ask Hashem, and then He responds to that in the way that's best for us. So we think it's best immediately. But in reality, Hashem knows that as other, you know, now, a younger kid is harder to hear that. So you have to be careful with, you know, like, just do the fixed ones, you know, the ones that you orchestrate. But as they get older, they can understand that. But there is something else. I don't know if I mentioned it. I came across my mind to mention it tonight, but I know I didn't. But I don't know if I mentioned it in the past. But there's a Tosfos Rid that I love to share with people. Yes, I don't even know if it's in print, but they found it for me on the Oitzer HaChochma. And he asks a question, he says, we thank Hashem for taking us out of Mitzrayim. If he didn't put us in, he wouldn't have to take us out. Well, what's the big deal? I'm beating someone like this, and then I say, oh, thank you for stopping beating me. You know, like, what's the thing? So he says like this. We started off, we stem from Terach. Terach was an idolater. And therefore we have a certain psul, in our, a genetic psul, that we have that in our history. As such, there would be a limitation to what Hashem would be able to justify giving us. So he put us in Mitzrayim. He made us go through difficulty. And then he had Rachmonis on us. And with Rachamim, he was able to give us far more than we could have earned. It's like, I call it an entitlement program. You know, our friends out here have a lot of entitlement. We do too today, entitlement programs. What's an entitlement program? You didn't earn it, but you deserve it. You deserve it by dint of economic situation, unemployment situation, whatever it may be. So you didn't earn it, but there's a standard for deserving. That's, Hashem has an entitlement program too. Suffering and challenge is one of the entitlements. So sometimes Hashem gives us challenges because he wants to give us far beyond what we could ever earn. And now this is not for your kids to understand yet, you know. But Lemaisa, it's a very important point that Hashem knows he's a master of timing. He listens. I would tell the kids, when a little kid davens, those Hashem does not turn away their brow. I mean, I have a story. I'll tell the story. I once said, spoke a shmuz about iyun tefillah. The Gemara says that a person, when a person is confident that he's going to get answered because he davened well, then the sultan gets involved and says, oh, you think you're such a tzaddik. Let's see where you're holding in the world. So it's a problem. A person shouldn't rely on his own tefillahs. So I had a chap. I said, but on children's tefillahs, you can rely. So the next day, I needed $50,000 that day. And I took my young kids, this was in Los Angeles, took my young kids around the table. And before they went to school, I said, we're going to daven. I need today $50,000. We said a kapitel tilim. Well, all I could tell you was by 1 o'clock, miraculously, somebody left the Yerusha. I didn't even know who the person was. Some people decided to prepay their tuition for the year. Some people, but by 1 o'clock, it all came together. So, like, children's tefillahs are very choshev, and they should know that. But sometimes Hashem collects them. You know, the Hasidim have a beautiful moshul. I mean, I don't know if your kids about the tears, it's not so good to talk about, but they say that Hashem has a cup. And when the tears of our prayers fill the cup, that's when Mashiach comes. That's when the Yeshua comes. That must be a big cup. But anyway, you know, Lemaisa, this is they should understand that it's not on demand. It's on appropriate timing for the best benefit for us. Now, those are big words for little kids, but you know what I mean. That idea, eventually they have to get across. So yes, it's going to help. But sometimes Hashem knows better. She's going to help tomorrow, going to help next week. But by the way, when it helps, give them the credit. Right. Be machazik there. You know, I'm sure I've told this story here, but I believe that if my kids today have strength in their emunah and bitochen, that it all stems, not all, but it stems from this one story, which I'm sure I must have told here, that we were living in Los Angeles. It was a summer night at 10:30 at night, and my kids were at a day camp. They had to go the next day, and my oldest daughter asked me, Chani Palak, she asked me for 75 cents to buy a soda. And I didn't have 75 cents, you know. The times were tough. Those days, 75 cents was a lot of money. Yeah, anyway, so she said, what should I do? I said, say Tilim. So she sits down with her youngest sister, and they're saying Tilim. And she said, I don't get it. I have to leave at 7:30 in the morning. How's the money? What's this going to make a difference? And the little kid says, maybe someone will give you. Maybe. I don't know what they were talking about. Anyway, she left without the money. I didn't have it. She comes back. What happened? A girl, a friend of hers, at the Purim carnival, which must have been 4 months before, borrowed 75 cents from her. And they forgot about it completely. They never mentioned it. That morning, the kid wakes up. Hey, I owe the Cohen girl 75 cents. She brought it to camp. to my kids, tefillah helps. Hashem is concerned about 75 lousy cents. It's a whole different attitude. And mamash, I'm quite confident that from that day, they began to see, and once they see other things too. And it is very important to share with our children Hashgacha Pratis. Real life Hashgacha Pratis is very effective. A young man was in my office yesterday, and he, not from the yeshiva, and he was telling me, he says, I also have a Hashgacha Pratis story. And I could see from the way he was talking that this was foundational to him. It was like, it really built. It happened to him when he was in the ninth grade. He was in the ninth grade, he got out of yeshiva, and he gets on the bus to go home, and he got on the bus in the wrong direction. It was a Friday afternoon. And then going, he sees something's wrong, the streets are going up, they should be going down, you know, and finally they come to the end of the route. So he asked the bus driver, across the street there's a bus that goes back. Okay, it was still time for Shabbos. He doesn't know what happened. He took the wrong bus. He ended up in Chinatown. Yeah, in Chinatown. A little ninth grader, no telephone those days, you know, and he's in Chinatown. All he sees is Chinese faces. It's Erev Shabbos. He has to go home. He doesn't have a phone. He's walking aimlessly. He doesn't know what to do with himself. And then he sees like some houses down a hill he's described. He walks that way. He sees a Jewish person. Maybe he looked Jewish, maybe he's wearing a yarmulke, I don't know. Who is he? He's a census person. He comes there once every 4 years or whatever it is. I don't know. You know, it happened to be there, boom, that minute, that day, that time, exactly there. And he says, he tells him, it's a Shabbos and this, what should he do? He says, come, I'll drive you home. Drove him all the way home. Like, this to him was like, you know something, Hashem really gets involved. If you get your kids to see these things, and they have a personal experience, it's very powerful. Yeah. Okay. Anything else? Kol Tuv should have a lot of nachas from every.